But tonight, I'm delighted to have Jan Bodie and Mary Stella Church returning to Many Rivers. It's always a delight when you're here. It's always mind-altering. And tonight they will be giving a talk on the subject of the Akashic Records. Okay. Thank you for coming back.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Say, let's all take a deep breath. Gentle breath, and you can close your eyes or not, but if you would, from your heart, call in those who are holy to you, your guides, your ancestors, whoever they may be, from your heart, and ask them to bless all of us with their presence tonight. Some people have a lineage they're calling in, so. Louder. Okay. How many people here are familiar with the term Akashic Records? Oh, interesting. Wonderful. It's sometimes known. I'm going to just stand, actually. I can talk louder when I stand. So the Akashic Record sometimes is known as the Book of Life as well, and it's kind of like the storehouse of information about everything. There's many famous or well-known people, basically seers. You're probably familiar with some of them: Annie Besant, Alice Bailey, Manly P. Hall, Rudolf Steiner, Edgar Casey, to name some, who have spoken and written about the Akashic Records. Now, I'm going to be honest all night. My confession is I took the metaphor literally, and I bet some of you did too. I imagine this big library up in the sky. I mean, I like books, so it worked for me. You know, you go up, you meet the gatekeeper, you get permission, hopefully, and they let you enter, and you go find out what you were last life or a million years ago or whatever. I don't know if they let you look at other people's records, but be that as it may. I really held that belief about the library in the sky, about the big book, the cosmic book, until Mary Stella and I met the Akashic Records.
So there's people here that we don't know. So a little background. Jan and I, in 1996, moved back to my family home in Santa Rosa, and in the spring equinox of 2001, she's got to be proud of me, I don't remember date, we experienced the opening of the first vortex on our land, and now there's a dozen vortexes and portals that have been unveiled. And the whole area of land that we lived on was Native American healing land with lots of vortexes that were veiled to protect them during a particularly horrible battle that went on around the wanting of the taking of these energies and such. And Jen and I, in hindsight, realized that the paths we chose individually before we met were us in training for the spring equinox of 2001 and the opening of the vortexes. And then once we came together, the training simply continued. And this is relevant to our story about meeting the Akashic Records, because in January of 2005, in the vortex we call the Stargate, it's an energy that some people go up and up into the, you know, home planets, and other people go down into the earth. But it's a really strong energy of traveling, and we call it the Stargate. And on this particular day, January 6, 2005, this very tall, robed figure came through the Stargate. And I'm a visual intuitive, so I see these, and Jan feels them. She's a feeling intuitive, but I'm very visual. And the being was very tall and robed and had, you know, I couldn't really see a face. There was just this shape, and this shape had the most beautiful, holy kind of feeling or sense about it. It was just absolutely amazing how strong and beautiful this energy was. And we came to know this being as the Akashic Record. And what he started, I keep referring to him as a he, not because he's an androgynous. There's no male or female, but for some reason it's always just come out as he. So we'll stay with that. He started following Jan around. And he would come up to Jan, and just like she did to you when we started, he'd come up, poke her in the forehead, and say, "Now is the time." And Jan would look back at him and go, "What do you mean? Time for what?" How frustrating it is when they come to give you a message and it's not clear, and you need to keep searching for. So for quite a while, he'd just come up and he'd poke her in the head and say, "Now is the time." So to talk about when we started actually working with the Akashic Records takes a little more backstory. Jen and I do energy cleansings on land and home. And this woman, Beth, had called us because she was being physically touched. So were her children. Her daughter was talking to spirits and getting answers. And her daughter was 4, her son was 2, her husband was in Iraq, she was on her own. And they lived in an area over near Stony Point in Hearn, in that area, and there used to be an old airfield out that way. In fact, my father was shipped out in World War II from that airfield. And these homes have been built on this old airfield. So when we show up, we're like, ah, we think we might know what's going on here. Because we too could feel these energies of these men that had been sent to war from there and never returned. And they were, their spirits were staying and they were hanging out there. So, you know, we always carry our crystals and sacred waters and cornmeal and ash and, you know, it's sacred tools that we use to do this work. And we went in and we went upstairs, which it felt like, even though that's not where they seemed to feel the most energy, where we were called to go. And we did cleansings in the upper bedrooms, the kids' room and the master bedroom. But just outside the master bedroom, there was this big corner window. And directly below it was what they referred to as a yard. It was sort of a postage stamp with concrete on it. It was just this tiny little square, and that was the entire outdoor area for this home. And in this tiny little postage stamp outside area was this pit. It wasn't physical, but this energetic pit. And it was the blackest black. It was sticky, gooey, tar-like. It was just hard to breathe in the presence of this energy. So we knew that that was where a lot of what is going on here was coming from.
When we were in the backyard and standing there, and again, it wasn't a visible hole, but it even to me, it looked like this darkened area. And I actually was a little overcome with a huge sense of grief. It was more than sadness, it was a deep grief. And I also felt a rage. And after standing there for, I have no sense of time when we do this kind of work, but it wasn't long, it was maybe a minute or so, I actually began to feel fear, and it started in my belly, and it came up into my chest, and got kind of caught in my throat. So there was this realm of emotions, and I flashed on melodoma, you know, just as a reference. This goes back to 1994. We did a year training with Maladoma and Sobomfu Somei, and they're from West Africa. It was called the Ritual Healing Village. And Maladoma talked a lot about grief, and he said, particularly in this country, we're afraid to deal with our grief. And I personally have witnessed that a lot. I'm a recovering psychotherapist. Because we're taught to, you know, we're taught that you're not supposed to cry and show your emotions, and yeah, I mean, that's changing now, but you know, I certainly grew up that way. And he said, the problem is, when you hold back that much water, it's going to erupt in fire. Something will come out. And if you think of what's going on just in this country, never mind the whole world right now, all these shootings and everything, we're not dealing with our sorrows. And so the explosiveness is just out of control. It's something to think about, you know, that we need to come back and balance, even between fire and water, between grief and joy, etc. At any rate, those are the feelings and the thoughts that came up in me while I was standing in front of this pit that wasn't quite visible. And then Mary Stella asked, what can we do to help? And as soon as she asked that question, and I always feel blessed when Mary Stella just, these pearls just, you know, pop out of her mouth. I wouldn't have thought of that question in that moment. How can we help? But she just said it. It came through her. And as soon as she did, I could feel a shift begin to happen. Not a healing, but I felt a lightness. It lightened up, and I felt gratitude. And I knew our presence was visible, palpable to the spirits there. And I knew there was a path. We didn't know what it was yet, but I was convinced that there was a path we could take. We did go back into the house at that point, and we told Beth that one of the things, because we talked about it as we walked up the stairs, etc. We told Beth, with the mom, that the land where she lives in Santa Rosa and the land where we live, which is maybe, I don't know, 5-6 minute drive, it's not that far, are connected. And we suddenly just knew that. I also channel information. It's not a thought, it just comes out sometimes, these words. But suddenly we knew that the two parcels of land were connected and were part of a Native healing center. And Maristella already and I already knew that was the background of where we're living. We didn't know that when we first moved up here. And Maristella was consciously aware when she grew up there. But at this point, enough had happened on our land that we did did know things and we were surprised. Anyhow, as we were talking to Beth, she opened up and shared with us that she had had visions of a big battle. And we looked at her and said, so have we. And that just sort of even cemented more that it was the same healing land connected. And as we continue to talk, and we now we're in conversation, so we're beginning to trust is an odd word, but you know we're feeling more at ease with each other, and feeling we can be more open, say whatever is really coming up. And we did talk about that likely it was spirits of the soldiers who had died. You know, the spirits had come back to where they had flew from. That was part of it, but also we were beginning to sense that some of those spirits, particularly when the ones bothering her young children, were children, and they were children who were caught in those battles and who died. So now we're beginning to understand part of what needs to be healed or shifted in some way. How this was related to the pit was that there was, as something was starting to form, it got disrupted, and the beings, the spirits, got caught in our world, in our time dimension, so to speak. And it was about that time that we actually left for that day. We didn't know what else we could do that day. And that was the first time that it had ever happened to us. We usually were able to do what was asked of us in one session, but that day we couldn't.
So, the first time she called was in late December. And she did call us back in late January and said that it had gotten a lot worse. Then it was really building and escalating. And my response was, well, good, we got their attention. You know, it's like whatever it is moving. And now we can come back and now we can get something done. You know, they're moving. They know we're here. And we knew that we'd have to go at night because that's when the energies were the most active. And we spent the day packing our tools once again and getting prepared and protecting ourselves to go for this cleansing, knowing that it was a big one, when the Akashic Record showed up, went to Jan, and said that what we were doing today was very, very important, that this healing was very, very important. And guess what else they said? Now is the time. And we're like, okay, now is the time. And he said, I will be coming with you. And we're like, okay, big day, big energy, the Akashic Record's coming. But we prepared ourselves and went off to her house once again.
We did. And then we discovered, or we were given the information that, does everyone know what a ley line is?
No.
Okay, yes or no, okay. It's like an energy meridians that we have in our body where the energy flows in certain directions and, you know, certain patterns. Well, on the earth has energy lines too, and they're called ley lines, L-E-Y. So we discovered that there was a ley line between our land and where Beth lived. That was part number one. But then we were doing a healing session with an individual, this is a totally separate story that ties in, who in the middle of his healing did a channeling and said, you know, you have two ley lines. We have an earth spiral pretty much in the center of Quebec. Yeah, it's not quite center. It's an earth spiral, and then these are all big stories. And then later, in the center of that earth spiral, the Stargate came that I still mentioned earlier. So what we learned was, and there are two ley lines that go through the center of that spiral, And in the olden days, when the natives used this whole area as healing ground, and the shamans lived there, that area where we live was called the Crossroads. It was the crossing of the rivers.
I kept seeing on that day crystal caves and pathways that moved through the healing land, which was new. It wasn't an experience that I'd had before. So that was beautiful and something to hold on to as we moved into this next healing. And when we do this, we literally, we walk in and say, so, you know, what are we being called to do? And in this case, I was called, in no uncertain terms, to go out to the pit. I was to go outside and be with the pit. And you know, there's a part of me that was very frightened because it was a pretty ugly energy, and a frightening energy. And I didn't know what I could do in the face of that energy, but I knew that I had to go. And I went out and I stood on the edge of this pit of just black darkness. And all of a sudden, I was consumed by fire. It was just this whoosh of fire, and I was surrounded by this fire. And as I'm feeling that, I look down, and the black in the pit has begun to go into a golden color. And it's starting to move, and it's starting to change. And all of a sudden, out of the center of this golden color that is now moving quickly in the center of this big pit, a huge hand, just shot up through the center of this Stargate vortex and grabbed the fabric of time and just ripped open this big opening in the fabric of time. And I'm standing there like, wow. And the energy from the pit is now perfectly clear. And it's starting to send light up into this space, this darkness that had been created up above. And I got the message that this was the universe of possibilities, that a whole new possibility had just opened up, and that we could create whatever we wanted, you know, from this space, and that was the energy that this particular Stargate vortex holds, is that possibility of creation. And so I couldn't tell you if 2 hours or 2 minutes had gone by. It was just so being in that moment. But when, again, I found myself standing on the edge of this now clear circle, I realized that I needed to go back in the house now and find the others, because they had gone off to do something else.
Yes, we did. So for me, as we went in separate directions, I was actually quite concerned. I mean, this was in January. It was at night. So it's cold out there. It's dark out there. She's all alone. She doesn't even have a flashlight. And I'm upstairs in the house, and I'm going, I hope Crystal, and she's, you know, she's with this energy that's pretty intense. But I also had to trust and surrender, which I did, of course, but, you know, there was this piece in me that had concern. I was told to do something very different. Spirit directed me to bring in the fire. Well, I am a fire person, you know, in terms of elements. But I just, you know, it kind of like, oh dear, I really have to do this all, because we work together almost all the time. So it was like, where's Stella won't be here? So we were directed to the daughter's bedroom. This is, again, on the second floor, where the mother and the son also had a bedroom. So Beth and her two children and I went into the daughter's bedroom. And the first thing we had to do was move all the toys away, puzzles and pillows and whatever. I mean, these kids had a lot to keep them busy. So that took the first few minutes. And we kind of made a space, and we sat on the floor in a circle. And then I talked to Beth and I said, well, our task is to calm the fire. Now, we want to be careful because fire can be very dangerous and volatile, rageful, angry. That's not what we're looking for. We're looking for the loving fire. You know, the fire of Mother Earth, that our grandfather sun, you know, the fire that can warm us and heal us and nurture us. So we want to be cautious when we're doing this. So she felt really comfortable doing all this, so this was a good thing for me. So we started, we stopped talking, and we just really put our attention on bringing in the fire, the healing fire. Well, again, I can't say time, but it did feel like we were there for a few hours, but I don't know. All I do know is it was though our entire body was weeping with tears. It got so hot in that room. The children who were sitting, you know, just ended up just toppling over and fell asleep. I mean, they were gone because it was that warm in there. No running around, nothing, none of that. Our bodies ached. It was like we were doing our work. It was, we weren't like physically doing something, but we were doing our work. Our bones ached. We were dripping wet in all parts of ourselves. You know, basically I can say we were on fire, in a sense. We were on fire. And we were clear that what we wanted to do is bring that, have that fire come up through that pit, that black, sticky gunk where Mary Stella was, have that fire purge that whole area. And the abuse of the blood and all the trauma from the battles, as well as the deaths that had been more recent. Well, at some point, Mary Stella did return, and I heard the door open, so I opened my eyes and turned toward it, hoping it was her. Mm. And I saw, as she opened the door, she was blasted with that heat. It was actually knocked back. She didn't fall down, but she was literally knocked back.
It was hot. it was very hot in that room. And the little girl, whose name I just can't remember, in her sleepiness looked up at the ceiling and said, "The children just want to say they're sorry." I just about broke my heart when she said that. Oh, the children just want to say they're sorry. And so we could tell that the shift that needed to happen was happening. The heat in the room was lessening. The children were sort of coming awake. Everything was shifting back into this kind of a reality. And we realized that there were a lot of spirits that had just been released, not only from this pit, this hole, but the servicemen, you know, all of the spirits that were there, they were showing up now. They were like being much more visible and bright and being released. And the Akashic Record went down into the living room, and the living room was just below where we were up in the bedroom up above. And he became eight figures. So he's one in many, and formed this circle in the middle of the living room. And we were in tears because you could tell, we weren't even in the room, but we could see and feel this circle they had created and the invitation that it was for all of these spirits to come and enter the circle of remembering, where they could step into this vortex created by the Akashic Records, remember what they needed to remember and go where they needed to go, do what they needed to do. And they just stayed and held the space with that same glow and holy beauty that, you know, the first figure that came through the Stargate held. And they did. They started to come. They started to move towards the center of the circle. And you could just see the shift, and they would go. And they would go. It was just miraculous to watch.
I get tears in my eyes sometimes. It was incredibly powerful. It was unexpected. I mean, who would expect this thin-robed, hooded, tall spirit to come and poke you in the forehead anyhow, but to have the one become as many as was needed to hold that circle. We've had other experiences since then, and it's not always eight. It's whatever needed or needed in the moment. I was struck by every spirit had a choice. No one was forced to enter the circle. It was totally an invitation. You know, this is available. This is an opportunity should you choose to take it. And it was totally up to each individual spirit if they wanted to step in. But they knew, I mean, the energy was clear, that if they chose to step into the circle, they would not only be healed, they would remember. They truly would remember who they really are, their divine selves, and they could move on and be where they were meant to be next. And that was the invitation. So what I'd like to do, I'm in the process of writing a book about all of the dozen vortices and portals and all the experiences Mary Stella and I have had, and there's several people in this room who are very aware are in some of our circles. And what I'd like to do is finish this experience that we've been talking about, how it ended for us that night, by reading the end of that chapter to you. And it's not very long. More spirits than the ones who lived in the house lined up. Spirits throughout the neighborhood and beyond answered the portal's call. I experienced them as awake and alert, determined and purposeful as they arrived in the living room. I also felt their relief and gratitude to be freed. Beth, Mary Stella, and I, each in our own words, expressed the dramatic changes we felt in the energy around us and sensed throughout the house. The dense pockets of confusion and fear were transformed into a light and calm, loving and clear vibration. When we left, it was about 10 o'clock that night. The portal remained open with Beth's permission. Generally, we would never leave a portal that had been opened because of what we were doing. We wouldn't leave that house until it was closed. But in this case, we knew it was going to stay open all night, if not longer. And we've had since then experience in our house where it's been open almost a week. But we got her permission. We explained to her, and she said she totally felt the shift. She wasn't afraid. She knew they were safe, and absolutely. So it was with her blessing. Mary Stella and I were silent during the drive home, integrating the sacred power and divine force of elemental fire with human intention. Mentally and emotionally, we relive the miracles of dimensions and portals, the fabric of time and the universe of possibilities. But the sweetness of introspection ended abruptly when I noticed a wave of movement along the side of the road. "What is that?" I shouted. Then I saw them, literally hundreds of wandering spirits who had responded to the call from Beth's house. They were following the path to the circle of remembering, the portal that would release them from limbo and lead them home. As we drove north, an endless wave of spirits traveled south. I sobbed for their decades of wandering, lost in confusion and anger, grief and despair. I cried out for the dead ancestors who cannot reach their remembering, and I wept for the living who forget to try. Did agree to join us tonight, and I'm assuming you're here because you saw a flyer to meet the Akashic Records. So we know you are going to have that opportunity at this moment. If you want to close your eyes just so that you can focus not on this visual, all of which are lovely, but the inner space. And again, I suggest you go to your heart, get out of your head. Bring that point of awareness down into your heart. And you can make quietly inner space that request that the Akashic Records come to you. You may have a question. I have no idea if they'll answer it if you do, but they do. Or he may or she may. Perhaps you just want to be an open vessel in the moment and see if the Akashic Records has a message for you.
really hot. Whenever they come to a room like this, it's like true. It's like being in that room at the house. It's like woof.
Did anyone have anything happen or experience something that they're willing to share in the group?
Some words. I think it's the name of a movie. I don't know.
Can you talk just a little louder?
Sure. Some words just kept going over and over in my head. The unbearable lightness of being.
Mm.
What is that? It's a movie and a book, and it's unbearable. The word is unbearable. Huh? So, read it.
Yeah. Must be something there for you.
Is it more words than this?
No,
that's
the title.
That's the title.
Really
a light book.
Hmm. Might be. You may want to follow through on that.
Hmm.
I bet you carry it here.
I'm just going to say
that. I can get it for you.
There you go. Quickly, I bet.
Anyone else? Now, not to put anyone on the spot, if there's anyone who's worked with us with the Akashic Records and would like to share some little thing, you're invited to do so, and that's only if you choose to.
Well, okay. So,
and talk a little about it.
Yes. So, I was... Jan and Mary still have a class, Lessons of Land and Spirit. Huh? And I had done that class for the second time because I just kept wanting more, and it was about to end, and then what, and so as much information comes for me in the shower. I was in the shower one morning and had a visit from the Akashic Records, and called Jan and Mary Stella and asked them, if they could both be on the phone and ask them about starting a circle of remembering that is still ongoing. What is it?
Many years, yes.
6, 8 years later, still an ongoing circle. But, I had that experience of them, and it was about there are these vortices on their property, and each vortex has its own unique energy and its own
gatekeepers.
And so the circle of remembering was to, the request was to go deeper with that, and also that there were some of us that are just drawn to be there. And like at that time for me, anything that any meditation, any event that Jan and Mary Stella were having, I was there because I just really needed to be there. And there were others like me. And so the request was to start a circle that we could kind of investigate why are we called here, and what are we here to do and learn. And so that was my experience with the Akashic Records that morning in the shower. So they don't come anywhere.
That's true. They don't care about these mundane things. Does anyone have any questions about this? Or yes?
I have traumatic brain injury, so I don't remember. But the reason I came here is because I knew about the Akashic Records a long time ago. And I had an accident in 87, but I remember I knew about the Akashic what is the purpose for like what you're doing? I mean, don't you feel like each person has a separate service that they fall in touch with what their thing is to do? I mean, I don't really understand what the purpose of the Akashic Records is. Is there a purpose?
Well, I would imagine, I mean, I can't speak for them, but I can tell you just my viewpoint here. I would imagine there are multi-purposes. In the experience we talked about tonight, it was truly to help these earthbound spirits who no longer had bodies but were caught here, to help them move on, to be released from I'll call it a discomfort. I imagine it was much greater than that, of being caught here and stuck. So that's one purpose they had. We've had experiences when we talk about the circle of remembering, which we approach in many ways. Teresa named some of it. What those of us who are doing this on a regular basis, we are trying to shed some of the beliefs that we're stuck in. You know, I mean, you know, don't we all believe our beliefs? I mean, when you think about this, how absurd it is, right? We know it's a belief. It's not necessarily a truth, but we believe them. We act accordingly, right? So I've been working on that a lot for a long time, actually. But, you know, we're so much more than we even know we are. Mary Stone and I do a lot of intensive work on what truly is my purpose here. I'm here for a reason. It's not necessarily standing here tonight and talking to you, although that's a wonderful thing to do. But there is a deep purpose for, I believe. And see, there's the belief, but it's true. It is the path I'm on. I think there's just so many potential answers. It's a great question, but there's no one answer.
Yeah, there isn't. Like when you were just talking, I thought of the show, The Ghost Whisperers. Uh-huh. And I was thinking, that's what they're talking. Like, I'm just wondering, because I've always been a very spiritual person, mm-hmm. and I've had my guru when I was 21 then 22, and I was into so many Eastern things. Mm-hmm. But like now I just feel totally like, I feel like I'm looking for my path again. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it just keeps starting over and over. I mean,
it's really
nothing to, I don't know, I feel like I need to feel like I'm on actual path.
Well,
I don't know if anyone can tell me, and I just feel like I know that I'm the only person that can. It seems like the older I get, there's more information, mm-hmm. more wisdom that happens, mm-hmm. and it feels like, what? You know, so I don't really, I guess I'm just looking for an answer, and I probably will always be looking for one. I'm here, and just here, I think, to learn, and then mm-hmm. I'll go to the next
one. So, I think you're saying some wise things. I personally feel, and my path has been that way. You know, for years we did a 9-month training called Crones in Training. You know, there are developmental issues. I mean, you know, when we get to be a certain age, are we really in ownership of who we are? Do we really recognize how much we've learned, what we've accomplished? Are we gathering our strength and our wisdom so we can move forward still? You know, I mean, you're asking some good questions. I don't think there's one answer. And I think that things change. Right now, you know, I don't, you know, I'm probably, since you're listening to us, you're going to sort of agree. You know, we're being inundated with, you know, new energies, tons of light. And I pray every night. We have an ancestor altar we go to every night before we go to bed. Thank you for the light. help us integrate it. You know, it's like, yes, I feel it, but I got to integrate it in a way that it's really serving and allows me to do more, be more of who I am. You know, in the rightful sense, you know, in the rightful path. So I think what you're saying, of course it always changes.
Just that last chapter, that last thing you said, that's my whole thing. It's like, I always feel like, what's the purpose of feeling then? How do I integrate it? But I didn't think that. But that's good to know that.
All right. Is there anyone else who has a comment or question? Yes.
When you were talking about when the Akashic Records showed up as this being, I'm curious to know how you identified it, like how you applied the words Akashic Records to the being, or what did the being give you those words?
They identified themselves. See, I'm not a visual. I feel.
Right.
I channel. But I didn't see them, so I don't...
When I first saw this being come through, it was... it was like a knowing. And it's not like we had been working with the Akashic Records at all. I had done a hypnotherapy class, studies for a while, several years before, and the whole thing was, you know, it is the library in the sky, and you have to be very good, and you have to beg to get there, you know, and you know, I just never felt worthy to go look in my own book, you know, based on that particular belief. So it wasn't something that we were working with. So when it came through, and it was like, this is an Akashic record. This being is the record. It was just a revelation. I can't pinpoint any particular thing that he said or did. Doesn't talk much.
So do you think of him as being a connector to the records, or the records, the actual records?
Records are alive. Our records,
we're carrying them too,
are alive.
Right.
And it took us a while to fully get the extent of what it meant for this concept to come to us in this form. You know, that it was alive. Our records are alive. That when I interact with anyone here tonight, it's interacting with my living, you know, records. You know, and this energy or this being who can be one or many, depending on what is needed, is just one of the manifestations of that. But the fact that the Akashic Records are living, you know, that it has life, is much different than words in a book, you know, or looking yourself up kind of thing.
It was a great metaphor because it allowed people to start thinking that something like this could exist. We had access. So it was a great metaphor, but we can't get stuck on it. Sorry.
I was reading a book by Richard Redd called The Gene Keys, and kind of a transformational version from shadow to moving through our wound to transcendence in some ways. And I was reading this one gene key serendipitously. It's the 22nd hexagram. They coordinate with the hexagrams, and this particular one is about embodying grace and this portal of grace and the backdrop that makes the grace so exquisite is the tremendous suffering that we are connected to in our lineages, our fractals, I think it's interesting because in this particular hexagram he talked about the Akashic Records several times. Mm. And so for me it's stirring because I have
chance to look in at, you know, what my potential, my family of suffering, the people who have suffered, mm-hmm. and who, you know, can understand, you know, what a gift it is to have a new perspective on, you know, these different spokes that, you know, move into our what makes up our culture, what makes up our embodiment, our sacrifice, you know. Anyway.
One of my favorite sayings, this is not an original, there are many roads to Rome. And that's true. There are so many ways we can approach to grow ourselves into being who we are.
When we do any rituals at our house or anything, we invite people to bring their belief system, you know, what brings them to the sacred place the easiest and the fullest, because that's what it is. They're all just paths to the same place. So we're not saying that you have to adopt our experience of the Akashic Records.
Mm-mm.
We're just saying this was our experience of them and our revelations of, you know, our records and the aliveness and, you know, in being form. And, you know, if you can experience that, that's wonderful. If not, then you have your other ways. You have your ways of connecting to all of that.
Yes?
Oh, sorry. You'll be next.
I appreciated what you said about the water and fire, and that when we don't express that emotion, that it comes out as fire. Do you have ideas for how we can do that right now in our everyday lives? You know, because I feel like I have all this bottled up emotion that wasn't expressed, and I'm wanting to release that. And I want to do it quickly and easily and just release it. I feel like I'm just wondering if there's a...
Well, you know, there's two sides to all coins, right? So if you've got a lot of bottled up, like grief, is that what
mm-hmm.
you mean? Okay. So you can turn to the other side of water, which is water is an incredibly powerful healing force. You know, maybe even if you're standing in the shower,
mm-hmm.
just imagine that it's washing away the layers that have been sticking inside you. You know, when you do this kind of thing, it's not just the outer layer. You're imagining that water within you moving through and truly cleansing. Think of the qualities of water. Water is fascinating because, you know, if you think of a river or something, or what, any body of water, you know, nothing's going to stop it.
Right.
You know, not a boulder, nothing will stop it. It will find its way.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just know that those tears are actually would like to come get out, probably. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you could think of it that way. So, you know, metaphorically speaking, remove the stones that you're carrying around that are weighing you down,
yeah.
you know, and let the water move again, because it will naturally flow
mm-hmm.
if you let it.
That's helpful. I'm very drawn to water in general.
Like, yeah,
I drink a ton of water, so
yeah.
I like being more present, or the intention of it as
healing.
Yeah.
You're bringing in the healing water.
Yeah,
and if you intend that, you will feel the shift.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
With Maladoma and Sabonfu, they do really large grief rituals.
Mm.
And, I mean, it's like 3 or 4 days with huge altars and really releasing grief into this altar area and being protected from... But the piece that comes up for you right now is... you know, during the actual release period, people are just all out in the open and there's drumming, and when your grief comes up, you move towards the altar to release that grief, and whether it's, you know, whatever way that you do it. And someone in the group, whether you know them or not, comes with you and protects your body
mm-hmm.
so that you can totally let
yeah.
go and not hurt yourself. you know, that there's someone there to hold and to protect this physical body. And the level of release is just amazing compared to, you know, having to hold yourself together, kind of.
Right.
So, if there's an opportunity to afford yourself that space where you can let go at that level.
In community, I mean, that's the thing. In our culture, we have communities, we have circles that gather, and they're on a schedule, and you know how it is. You have a meeting, and you have a circle. And it's wonderful, and I'm not putting it down, because given the way the structure is in this country, how else would we do it and make it work and have consistency? But where Maladoma comes from, and people of many traditions, their idea of community is very different. Someone's in trouble, the community comes together. It's not about, oh, well, can we meet next Friday?
Mm-hmm.
It's like now.
Right.
So consider that. Who's your community? Who can you call? And maybe it's not going to be this minute. It maybe it will be on Friday. But you could still gather people who would hold that space for you and be with you. I don't mean they have to physically hold you, although they could. But that's not what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. Have someone ritualistically pour water over you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, create the ritual. I mean, I remember we were stunned. I'll never forget that weekend of that grief ritual. It was in Occidental. I will never forget it. We walked into a room that was half full. People were still gathering. Maladoma was up there, and he said, oh, our two gatekeepers have just arrived. And so we're looking behind us. What is he talking about? I mean, that was intense. That man standing at this huge altar they built outside. This was out in the outdoors. And the certain people were asked, they created an altar space that you wouldn't believe, from logs and all kinds of things they found on the land. And then they had to put everything back later at the end of the weekend. But all this, and it was huge. And we had to stand at that altar and make sure, as people, we had what's called grief bundles. And as people threw them in, we had to make sure they didn't get into that contaminated area. Gee, thanks, Maladoma. I mean, it was intense.
Did you find the gatekeepers?
Yes.
Oh, neat.
That's right.
And we had another question over here, and we're okay?
Yep, we're okay.
Yeah, okay. He said by nine, so we should.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just am really interested in that whole, the whole grief thing that's societal, that we are not meeting that need or whatever, and you know, I feel it, and I have this kind of like, you know, struggle, because it seems like the more I feel it, the more all I want to do is stay home and make art and read the newspaper. I can't listen to the news. I can't, you know, I can't be in public. I, you know, so I'm just like making art. And but anyway, when I did this, you know, invited in the energy of the Akashic Records, I could really feel it. And then I could also feel like my urgency or whatever, with, you know, like, what am I supposed to do? Should I do this? What about the children? What about, you know? And I was asking all these questions, and I could feel my adrenal glands just kind of like going like, and, you know, it was so funny, because the energy just kind of went, you know, hold on. Just calm yourself, you know. And then, and that was great, because then when we came back, I just felt completely different.
We really have to get out of our own way.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes practice. From my experience, it takes practice.
And a little help from the Akashic Records.
Yeah, well, then that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm
going to
use them.
I'm
going to
call on them. Yeah, this is very comforting presence that, you know, that I need. Yeah.
Lovely. We can continue talking. I'm going to just start, if you're interested, take a flyer. We don't do this every year. We do it maybe once in 2 years. I'm not sure how often. We've done this maybe twice so far. But this is a class called Lessons of Land and Spirit. And it lasts for 8 weeks. We'll be meeting on Wednesday evenings. And it's all the big stories. So it's about the cauldron with the pyramid. These are all on our land. It's about the first vortex that opened in our living room at spring equinox in 2001. It's about the water vortex, and it's about the cauldron, the fire cauldron, the crystal spire,
with the pyramid,
and
the crystals. It goes on and on.
Were there any other questions about tonight while she's doing that? Or about Akashic Records, or... Well, there are no more questions.
Oh, okay.
So unless you have something,
well, I just like to thank all of you for being here. The
yes, thank you.
It's just lovely, and we love being in groups with the Akashic Records. So thank you for that opportunity. Thank you.